headlines, when you see the press coverage on that day, I think anyone and everyone, and understandably so, and I would say quite rightly so, especially when it comes to Brian Nichols, you know, you can't get away from the fact he killed four people. He bludgeoned Cynthia Hall, the prison warden. She has never regained her faculties fully again since that day. What he did was monstrous, and he is serving multiple life sentences for that reason. Ashley Smith, by her own admission, was a meth addict who had lost custody of her own daughter and, you know, had made several bad choices with her life. Mm-hmm. Now, that's the surface. That's, you know, the headline. Why we wanted to make the movie is something happened in those 7 hours in that apartment that led to a situation whereby Ashley Smith didn't become Brian Nichols' fifth victim, where Brian Nichols didn't end up committing suicide by cop, he had three guns in that apartment. He could have gone out blazing, knowing that they'd shoot him down, maybe take a couple of more cops with him. What ended up happening is that he let her go, gave himself up, she never touched that drug again, she got her life back together, and her story has brought healing to thousands of people because she was able to step into forgiving herself, step into the grace of God to accept her second chance, which she didn't think she was worthy of. I mean, when Brian Nichols turned up on her door, she felt, this is God's way of saying you've messed up too much, it's time for you to die. So, you know, it's not like these are two people who we are celebrating what they did. We're just talking about the fact that somehow God's grace intervened in the lives of two people who were undeniably on a downward spiral, and that in and of itself is miraculous.
Okay. Something that I found very interesting about the film is how you have the power of good and the power of evil as it relates to religious faith. They were juxtaposed throughout the movie. For instance, he talked about, Brian Nichols talked about his father going to church every Sunday, but he was a mean drunk. And then he said, I've got a demon in me. And then on the other hand, you have the purpose-driven life, that book being read. So you have these two things that are going on, talking about, you know, being a person of faith, but they're coming from opposite ends. Was that interesting to you? Did that strike you at all?
Well, it's just the truth, you know. In looking into Brian Nichols' life, he had been brought up in the church, but he had developed very negative thoughts and feelings about the church. He felt that a girlfriend of his had been stolen from him by one of the church pastors, and, you know, he felt like he'd been wronged in several different ways, wrongly or rightly. I think as Christians, we all know and must admit that the church isn't perfect. God is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in him saying, I have a demon in me, which he did say on that night, it's also, you know, the Bible says, teach a child in the way he should go and he will not depart from it when he's older. I believe when you are brought up with the truth of who God is, no matter where you go or what you do, there is residue of that teaching, there is residue of that truth, and I think that that's partly what, you know, helped Brian realize that he has evil within him that needed purging, but it doesn't take away from the reality that his church experience was, for whatever reason, a negative one. And I think that, again, one of the things we try to do with the film is not make everything be black and white or color in with perfect lines. Life isn't perfect, you know. The Christian life isn't perfect. You only have to look at the Bible to see that. So we wanted to make a film that really reflected the truth of the challenges of both life and spiritual life.
And in preparing to portray Brian Nichols, did you meet with him or his family? Did you meet with the families of the people that he killed? How did you prepare as far as making it authentic?
I couldn't get to Brian Nichols because the nature of his sentence means that he's not a afforded the privilege of seeing anyone other than his parents. He's been in solitary confinement pretty much for the entire time since he went to prison. So I couldn't do that. But, you know, I did spend a lot of time with Ashley Smith, who he took hostage that day. And she was, of course, a huge source of information. I also met Candy Wilhelm, who is the wife of the customs officer who was murdered that day. And of course, there was a lot of footage. A lot of articles were written about Brian, and then the ensuing trial, which also had a lot of footage of him. So, you know, I had to cobble him together in ways that were imperfect. Of course, meeting him would have been perfect, but that was a luxury that I couldn't be afforded.
Okay. He said in the movie that he never thought that he committed a rape. Do you know if he thinks that today? The whole, you know, crime that led to all of this?
I don't. You know, he maintained through the trial that he did not rape his girlfriend. In his mind, that was partly why he felt the need to break out of the court jail, because he was looking at a potential sentence of 25 years. That combined with hearing that he had a newborn son, he felt caged, wrongly so, as far as he was concerned, and that was the impetus for breaking out. But the fact remains, he then went on to murder four people and injure Cynthia Hall in a horrific way. So, you know, it makes you question someone who was able to do that. How can you fully engage with the fact that they didn't rape someone? It's very, very difficult. At the end of the day, he even said, because I've now spent time with Brian Nichols' mother, Brian Nichols himself feels like he is where he is supposed to be.
Now, did he actually leave that message on the phone for his son as he was getting ready to turn himself in? Ashley chose not to do drugs on that night, even though she had been up until that point. Was that pretty much true too, or?
That's true. That's absolutely true. She was held at gunpoint. He actually asked her three different times to take meth with her, and the way Ashley says it is that she felt that Jesus literally took over Brian Nichols' body at that point and said, are you going to choose life or are you going to choose death? And that was the choice before her. And she also said that if she was going to die, she would rather die with her system clean than with it filled with that drug anymore. And I think that part of the miracle of this story is that for all the deadly things that Brian did that day, his life and the demon that was residing in him was a mirror to Ashley of where darkness can take you, where a downward spiral can take you, where bad choices can take you. And it literally, you know, like the Bible says, in your weakness I am strong. I think she accepted and could see that she'd hit a rock bottom and she was confronted by her own weakness and God was able to take over.
Okay. I think think of you mostly associated with good characters in films, you know, whether it be in Selma or The Nice Pastor and The Help, or even though you weren't the nicest of sons and The Butler, you still weren't a murderer. So what attracted you to this particular, you know, bad role?
In its entirety, you know, anyone who's read the Bible, that is an R-rated book. You know, that is a book full of murder and rape and pillage and darkness, but the overriding thing in the Bible is that the light always overwhelms the darkness, and God's grace, when it is allowed to infiltrate, will turn things around. And so, you know, for me, I don't discriminate about the nature of the role as long as what is ultimately being said through the story in its entirety is not glamorizing the darkness or glorifying the darkness, but showing it to be the way not to go, then to me there is not much difference in terms of why I would want to do Selma or want to do Captive, because both films are about how light can overwhelm the darkness, and as an actor, I am committed to that. I want to be part of telling stories that do that, and you know, the nature of the role, as long as it's interesting and complex, but ultimately doesn't glamorize those negative things, then, you know, I enjoy mixing it up.
Okay. Now, speaking of Selma, you said earlier this year at the ecumenical service at Ebenezer that God told you that you would portray Dr. King in the movie 7 years before the movie came out. I'm curious as to how you actually heard the voice of God. What was that like?
Well, God speaks to everyone differently. To me, it was the only way I could describe it. It was a knowing in my spirit. You know, it's the same voice I heard for the first time when I was 16, and is the reason I became a born again Christian. It's the same voice that spoke to me about marrying my wife, about the names of my kids before they were even conceived. So, you know, it's often a voice that also crosses my will. You know, it's not something it's one thing to hear God saying you're going to have a Porsche when that's something you've wanted for years and years. It's another thing where something that is not on your mind at all is being told to you. And I, you know, 7 years ago, 8 years ago, there's no way I'm thinking of myself as Dr. King. But, you know, I know that voice, and it was very clear.
Oh, last question, guys.
Okay. I wanted to find out from you, I'm a big fan of Americana. What's going on with that right now?
The script is being written as we speak. Yeah, it's in the works.
Okay. Any date as to when it's going to come out, you think?
No date. You know, until there's a script that everyone's happy with, there's no point in dating anything. So, you know, the writer is beavering away, and hopefully he'll deliver.
Okay, well, thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate it.